Well, now let's meet our very special guest on today's programme, Rick Buckler, one-time drummer in The Jam, who has published That's Entertainment, My Life in The Jam. Rick, welcome aboard. Nice to talk to you.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I have to say, I loved the book. I absolutely loved it. It's searingly honest. How did you come to write it?
It was something that was in the back of my mind that I was going to do at some point, and I obviously, you know, I started it some time ago by just making notes and, you know, and it just started taking more and more shape, and I think by last year sometime, it was pretty much all there that it needed to be sort of just, given some bones and find a good publisher to put it out, and that's really, it just all sort of come together that last year. It was no time scale as such to it, but I'm glad I have finished it and I have done it, because I think people seem to enjoy it, so that's the main thing.
Well, it's a great read. And I mean, one of the things that I found very interesting was that, you know, clearly when The Jam came to an end, you and Bruce probably would have wanted it to carry on, but you don't appear in any way whatsoever to be bitter about that.
No, I mean, I think you've got to be realistic about this. You know, I mean, Paul obviously felt that he wanted to move on. I mean, we did try and sort of dissuade him. I think he was the only person in the world who actually wanted the band to finish. The record company weren't happy, we weren't happy, Paul's dad wasn't happy, the fans weren't happy, I think that's the way he felt, and there was no sort of talking him round or anything, so we did sort of finish off our commitments for the rest of that year in 1982. Hoping, or at least I had in mind that he would that Paul would change his mind and maybe he won't burn all his bridges, and that we could put the Jam on hold if he wanted to go off and do a couple of other things, other projects or whatever, but that never happened, obviously. That was the end of that.
Well, the whole story is there from the beginning to the end, although not in chronological order, which is an interesting approach, and I think the right approach too, because it sort of keeps you on your toes as a reader. But you answer an awful lot of questions, and you tell a brilliant story. And of course, what people have to realise these days, if they're younger, let's say, is that you used to have to spend a few years to get to the top, didn't you? I mean, you guys were together for a while before you had a hit record, and even then they were sort of top 40 rather than top 10, so it's a slow-burning thing, or it was in those days.
Yes, it was. I mean, for my money, it's still probably the best way of doing things. You know, I mean, we certainly cut our teeth in the early days playing every weekend, wherever we could, and I think that did a lot for us as a band musically, and for the songwriting as well. I think it sort of gave us time to sort of hone our skills in that way. So by the time we did get signed, we were pretty much ready to go for it, you know.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And another thing that I found very interesting is the insight to being a drummer, because you clearly studied other drummers. Buddy Rich and Keith Moon get a mention, and I mean, it's almost like an exclusive club, you drummers, isn't it?
Well, it is. You are pretty much on your own in a band. There's usually only one drummer in a band, so you got. But I think it's the one thing I love. Used to love about it was the fact that you could go and watch other bands, and you could watch the other drummer, and you could learn so much just by seeing what they do, and hearing their various techniques and what have you. And it was a great way of sort of, if you saw something that you liked, a good feel or rhythm or something like that, you could sort of put that in the back of your mind in a sort of library and draw on it later on when you felt that you could use that sort of thing. And I'm sure most musicians do that to a certain extent. You know, you get your influences from somewhere.
Yeah.
But with drumming, there were some really good drummers to sort of, you know, draw upon, really.
I was also fascinated by the insight into appearing on programmes from Top of the Pops through to Old Grey Whistle Test and everything in between, really. And I wondered whether, was there a moment, be it on Top of the Pops or anything else, when you suddenly thought, do you know what, I think we've arrived?
Yes. Well, that sort of thing, when we did our first Top of the Pops, and you start to realise, well, you know, you have actually crossed a, quite a big threshold there once you've got chart success and you are appearing on Top of the Pops. For years, we used to watch these programs and wonder what it was all about, you know, to be part of that. To suddenly be there was, yeah, definitely a bit of a milestone, you know. I mean, there was a few of those, obviously, throughout the Jam's career, you know, when you first get signed, get your first single out, your first album, your first chart success, your first number one, all those things. It was just, it was, you know, it was great, that sort of journey. But, you know, once you've had a number one, the you get the daunting feeling of, well, what do you do now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where do you go? You know what I mean? It's, there's only down, isn't there?
Yeah, well, either down or call a halt, which is what Paul Weller did, of course. But you've certainly had some magnificence. I mean, one of the things that always struck me as a radio presenter or DJ in those days was that Jam singles always went in really high after the first couple because you had such a strong following.
Yes, we did. We had, I think, because we were predominantly a live band, that was where most of our fan base came from. You know, we didn't have to sort of plug records to get people to listen to them. I mean, the fan base was already there to buy the records when they came out. So we did a lot of work on that because we were always touring, you know, around the UK and Europe and the States and stuff.
And one question I suppose you probably get asked an awful lot, but I must ask it, is do you suppose that ever one day there'll be a Jam reunion, or do you think that's never going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen, really. I mean, there was a very good chance that when myself and Bruce were together doing The Gift, what then became From the Jam, you know, we made overtures to Paul then, you know, about why don't you just come along and jump up and do a number or two. And, the response from Paul wasn't particularly good.
Mm.
And I think he's still along those lines that, you know, he's always sort of said that he would never do a Jam reunion. So although never say never, I think it really is in the hands of Paul, and I don't think he actually needs to.
No.
And for some reason or other, he really feels like, you know, there's for him it is a never, you know.
Yeah,
So I wouldn't hold your breath.
Leave them wanting more, as they say.
Well, yeah.
And but the thing is, though, I mean, the book is called My Life in the Jam. That's entertainment. But it is your life. It's not just the Jam. I mean, there's a lot more to this book than the Jam, although that clearly was the highest profile part of your life. But you've had a life. I mean, you've run your own business and all sorts of things, haven't you? So.
Oh, yeah, I've done all sorts of things. But, I mean, it's like most scenarios in my life is they've always rotated around what happened in the early days with the Jam. The Jam sort of set the course for a lot of things, you know, and I'm sure that it's the same for Paul as well as Bruce, that, you know, everything that stemmed from our lives after that was because of the Jam.
So that's
why I sort of ended up sort of always rotating around that event, no matter what happened, you know, throughout my life. But I've done all sorts of things. So, my memories of the Jam are really good. You know, I mean, it was a dream come true to sort of to do all the things that we did manage to do and achieve and et cetera in that 5 years from 77 to 1982.
Mm.
So I've got no regrets there. Do you know what I mean? It's it did open up a lot more doors for me. To all sorts of things in the future.
Well, it is a great read. It really is, not just for Jam fans, but music fans generally. It tells a fascinating story that, after all, only you can tell. Rick, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and lovely to have you on the programme today. And hopefully we'll see you drumming somewhere near here very, very soon.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not involved in anything at the second, but you never know. I mean, attention's really on promoting the book, and I've got some Q&As which are coming up during June, which, you know, if there's anything that anybody feels that I haven't answered or talked about in the book, that they should come along and, you know, because it's fairly a sort of one-to-one sort of sessions.
Mm.
I mean, all the details are on strangetown.net for those sort of up-and-coming events. So that's really what I'm, what my my immediate future holds, anyway.
OK, well, I'm sure a lot of people will want to come along to that, but once again, the book is That's Entertainment, My Life in the Jam by Rick Buckler, and it's published by Omnibus. Rick, lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, thanks very much for phoning.